In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. There's an old country music song that begins with the words, "Me and Jesus got our own thing going. Me and Jesus got it all worked out." And it goes on to say that I don't need anybody else to tell me how to have my relationship with Christ. And that reflects sort of the religious ethos of the American people to a large extent, unfortunately. It's not that we don't have a relationship with Christ that's between the two of us, you could say, but it's more than that. The relationship that we have one with another is part of our relationship with Christ. You can't separate the two. A few years ago, there was some Protestant minister who I saw on TBN who had apparently discovered the important truth that communion was important. And for an evangelical, that's a big discovery because you don't get that impression in most evangelical churches. And so I was glad to see that he was talking about how important it was to take communion on a regular basis. But for a donation of any amount, he would send you a kit to where you could take communion at home by yourself, and which obviously showed that he didn't understand that communion wasn't just communion with God, but it was communion one with another. The Greek word is koinonia, and that means fellowship and communion. It's fellowship with each other, and that's one of the reasons why in the Orthodox Church we talk about being in communion with people who are in the same faith as us and not being in communion with those that aren't. Because we have, as members of the Orthodox Church, we have to have a relationship one with another. Christ talked about this in the Sermon on the Mount in great detail. We heard a little bit of the Sermon on the Mount in the second gospel reading. And in the first gospel reading, we heard Christ talking about the great commandments. But in the Sermon on the Mount, he talked about the Ten Commandments, which are just basically extrapolations of the two great commandments. But he expanded on the commandment, "Thou shalt not kill." He said, "Ye have heard that it was said of them of old time, Thou shalt not kill. And whosoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment. But I say unto you that whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment. And whosoever shall say to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council. But whosoever shall say, Thou fool, shall be in danger of hellfire." This might on the surface seem very easy to understand, but when you start thinking about what he's actually saying, there's a lot of things about this that are not self-evident. But one thing that's important is that Christ is not setting aside the law that we find in the Old Testament. You find very many Christians, particularly non-Orthodox, but even the Orthodox Church, that when you cite something from the Old Testament, they say, "Oh, that's from the Old Testament. We don't need to worry about that." Well, those two great commandments that Christ talked about in the first gospel reading are both quotations from the Old Testament. So you can't dismiss the Old Testament. And Christ never set aside the moral law of the Old Testament, and even the things that are no longer directly applicable to us because they're part of the ceremonial or the civil law of Israel. Those things still have meaning to us, and so we can't take the Old Testament and just say, ignore what it says there. Christ doesn't set aside the commandment, "Thou shalt not kill," or "Thou shalt not murder," if we were to translate it in a way that would be a little bit more precise for contemporary English. He actually expands on the meaning, and he extrapolates it into a finer definition than people had understood. He says that murder begins in the heart. It begins with anger. Now, he talks about being angry with your brother without a cause. That's because there is a righteous anger, and we find that expressed in the Scriptures by many of the saints and the apostles, and even Christ himself. And there are even times when the saints or the apostles refer to someone else as a fool. St. Paul, in his epistle to the Galatians, which we're reading in the daily lectionary, at one point he says, "Oh, you foolish Galatians." So if just using the word fool was being condemned here, then St. Paul would be condemned by Christ. But the Scriptures don't contradict themselves. The point here is not that you could never say to someone a rebuke along those lines. The point is what's in your heart when you say that. Are you saying that because they need a rebuke and you're concerned about their soul and you're concerned for their salvation? And so you're saying that to correct them, or are you just simply saying that to tear them down, to denigrate them. He's not condemning just chastisement. He's condemning ripping people apart in a way that is not loving, in a way that it shows that you think that you're better than them and you're scorning them. Now, he talks about three kinds of judgment here. He talks about, and there different interpreters take this in different ways. The first time he talks about the judgment, the word there could refer to the local authority on a synagogue level. And then he talks about the council, which in Greek he actually uses the transliteration of the Hebrew word Sanhedrin. So that would refer to the highest earthly authority, earthly spiritual authority that the Jews would have known. But then he refers to hellfire. Some people take these various judgments and the things that they're referring to as being varying degrees of sin. So when he talks about being angry with your brother, that's sort of like the lowest level, and that would get you in trouble with the local folks. But if you say raka, which raka is an Aramaic word that basically would be translated as you're brainless or you blockhead. It's an insult. But then when you say, thou fool, that's going to send you to hell. But what St. John Chrysostom says is that these are really three different ways of referring to the same thing. The judgment that's talked about for being angry with your brother without a cause, or the council, St. John Chrysostom says it's referred to as not an earthly council, but the council of the apostles that we're told will participate and judge the nations. And that when he talks about being in danger of hellfire, that's the ultimate aspect of that same judgment. So he's using three different ways of referring to the same thing. So it's not three different kinds of anger that he's referring to, but different. He's expressing it or describing them in different ways. Then he says, therefore, if thou bring thy gift to the altar, and there rememberest that thy brother hath aught against thee, leave there thy gift before the altar, and go thy way. First be reconciled to thy brother, and then come and offer thy gift. St. Paul tells us in his epistles, if it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. And what Christ is saying here is that if we are at church, and we're getting ready to offer in the Old Testament or in the system that the people he was referring to, they would have been offering a sacrifice of some sort of an animal. But in our case, it would be offering the sacrifice of prayer and participating by communing in the bloodless sacrifice of the Eucharist. He's saying that before you do that, if you have aught against your brother, you need to walk away and go be reconciled to your brother. So what St. John Chrysostom says about this is that he even sets aside the honoring of himself because he places so much weight on our need to be at peace with one another. Because who is our brother? Our brother is someone who's created in God's image, and so you can't denigrate the image of God and then come and worship God and have that be an offering that God will accept. We don't get very far into the scriptures in the book of Genesis before we read about God accepting the sacrifice of Abel and rejecting the sacrifice of Cain. And so just coming to church and just participating in the worship doesn't mean that you're offering acceptable worship to God. What kind of an attitude you have is very important. It's crucial. And we have in the lives of the saints an example of a saint who took this passage very seriously, St. John the Merciful of Alexandria. He had disciplined two minor clergymen and excommunicated them. One of them repented and was restored, but the other one became angry and fell into even worse sin. And St. John had intended to call him to him so that he could speak words that would soften his heart and would reconcile him to the church. But he forgot about it. But then he was in the middle of the liturgy, and he remembered that he had this issue with this man and that this minor clergyman who was way below him in terms of the status of the church and who had sinned, and he had justly punished him according to the rules of the church. And so he had not done him wrong in any sense, but he wasn't at peace with this man. And he stopped the service, and he went out to this man who was in the church, and he bowed before him, and he asked for his forgiveness. And that man was so touched by the act of St. John that he repented and eventually was found to be worthy by St. John to be ordained a priest. Agree with thine adversary quickly whilst thou art in the way with him, lest at any time the adversary deliver thee to the judge, and the judge deliver thee to the officer, and thou be cast into prison. Verily I say unto thee, thou shalt by no means come out thence till thou hast paid the uttermost farthing. A farthing is 2 mites. And so when we talk about the widow's 2 mites she placed in the offering, and that being an example of someone who gave more than them all because she gave all that she had, but the 2 mites were of such little value that most people would have considered them to be insignificant. That's what he's saying. Now, what is he referring to here? He's talking about if you have an issue with someone else, if you've harmed someone else, then you need to make peace with that person, because what you don't want to have happen is on the day of judgment that you have to answer for the wrong that you did that person, and that result in you being condemned. So this is what it's referring to. Now, when we hear things like what we've just talked about, what some people begin to think about is, oh, well, my Aunt Susan, I had done something that offended her, and she's passed on, and now what am I going to do? Well, if there's someone that's beyond the ability for you to make any kind of peace with, all you can do is pray for them and ask for God's forgiveness. The point here is not for us to just be racked with guilt and to give up hope and to say, oh, well, there's nothing I can do about it. There's maybe people in your life that you've harmed in the past and you've lost touch with them, and there's no way that you can make peace with them. Again, all you can do is pray for them and trust in God's mercy. The point is for you to deal with those people that you can make peace with, that still are among the living, and that they have been hurt by you. We need to take it very seriously when we harm someone else. And even there may be cases where we don't feel like we did very much, but they do. We need to make the attempt, at least on our part, to try to reconcile with them. We have it within our power to at least make the attempt. All we can do is we can ask for their forgiveness. We can make the attempt to be at peace. But that's what we need to try to do. We don't need to sit back and say, well, they're the ones that need to ask for my forgiveness. We need to make the first attempt. And if it's someone that the relationship is so difficult and painful that you can't really have a normal relationship with them, maybe you can at least write them a letter to where you don't have to worry about listening to what they have to say in response. Write them a letter and just express your love and your prayers for them and ask for their forgiveness and leave it at that. But make some kind of an attempt to be reconciled. We need to set aside all unrighteous anger and bitterness, all hatred, and try to be at peace with one another. It's very important. Our relationship is not between just us and Jesus. It's between us, Jesus, and everybody else who belongs to him, all those that are created in his image and are part of his body. We need to do that so that we together can offer our worship to God in a way that is pleasing to him. Amen.